and discuss what happened the night Desmond's life was taken, some current issues around police reform, and give us an opportunity to celebrate the legacy of a bright and beautiful, loving light that was taken from us far too soon. The idea of this segment was actually brought to me by a passionate, sapient citizen I have the privilege of calling friend. Community activist doesn't even describe all the solidarity and allyship this person consistently presents. So I found it fitting to begin this sacred interview with Ranshir humbly introducing themselves and their connection to the family.
My name is Ranshir. And I'm a member of the Justice for Desmond Phillips team. I've been working with Desmond's family since right after he was killed, and which is over 3.5 years now.
And David, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm David Phillips. I'm Desmond Phillips' father. I live here in Chico, as everyone knows.
And can you tell us about who Desmond Phillips was?
Desmond was a very, very lovable young man. My son, he very humble, kind, just a very good kid, mm-hmm. all in all. You know, he loved video games. He loved working. He was a very independent. He loved helping people. Didn't have to know you. That was his thing, helping people. He wanted to change the world. He was just a good kid, you know. Very good kid.
When I found out about the murder of Desmond, one of the things that really struck me selfishly was the fact that he was black and had mental health issues, and that looked likely largely contributed to his murder. Could you take us through his mental issues and how they developed, how he ended up in Chico?
He had had a mental episode in Sacramento County where he was living at the time. It was all new to us. But having that mental issue down there, it landed him in ICU in Sacramento for 4 days, actually. Desmond did not come home from work. His girlfriend was worried, so the family started calling around. They called me, you know, is Desmond down here with me? No. So after, doing a lot of running around, calling this and that, My oldest daughter had a friend that worked for Sutter General down there, and she had informed my daughter that she told her, your brother's here in the hospital in ICU. So we were all shocked, like, you know, what's going on there? SAC PD put him in there, you know. They put him in there for 4 days, and they would not give the family any information on anything. But at any rate, we found out where he was. We found out who and why he was there, who put him there. And so I moved him here to Chico with me to, you know, I thought keep him safer. You know, and that lasted again for like 7 months, and before Chico PD came in here and murdered him. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, those with mental health issues continue to be taken from us by the PD, unable to bring them in for treatment. So it seems undebatable that we need new mechanisms and more ability to deal with that issue. If you're just joining us, I am Corey Hunt, and this is the Peace and Social Justice Show on KZFR. I'm speaking with David Phillips. He is about to make a graphic recount of the shooting of his son on March 17th, 2017. Listener's discretion is advised.
On this day, celebrating Desmond, you know, I don't want you to have to relive any traumas, but I definitely want to give you an opportunity to speak to the situation and what happened that night on March 17th?
Okay, on March 17th, Desmond was in the early stage of having a mental crisis. And I recognized that, and I called the ambulance, as I did in the past. They'd been there several times, 3 to 4 times in the past. And, this time when they came, they did everything wrong. Again, because they weren't trained, but they did everything wrong. They came in here and they started taking things from him, you know, like his phone, his earphones, and then they grabbed him by the arm and asked him, "Do you want to go to the hospital?" Desmond jerked away. The ambulance went outside, and they started talking about calling Chico PD. And Desmond heard that, and Desmond shut the front door, the main door. He left the screen door open. And then hearing that, then he went, and from what happened to him in Sacramento, you know, and he's in a mental crisis, he went and he grabbed some kitchen knives. And I called back and I told them, I said my son had grabbed some knives so they wouldn't come in here and be surprised and say, oh, you know, and do what they did, sure. You know, and I feel that was covering all ends, you know. Mm-hmm. So when they came, the police came, they called the police, the police came and they were outside, guns drawn before they even came in here. They had every opportunity to get my grandsons out of the window if they felt that, you know, we were in danger. Mm-hmm. Mind you, I'm on the phone with dispatch all the time. They knew that we were safe in the room. And so what they did was they tried to keep me in the room, you know, so I guess I would not witness his murder. Because, like I said, I'm on the phone all the time with dispatch, and they knew that we were in the room. Apparently, Desmond was kicking on my door. Apparently, he got into his room where his two nephews were, and he looked around, and he shut the door back. And he came back in the front room, and he was just pacing around. And by me being on the phone with dispatch, they're relaying everything to the police, so Desmond was up here by himself, and the two in the back, Martin and Amit, they let them know up front that they're making entry into the back, into the kitchen. And when they said that, the front door came flying open. There was no word said to Desmond, nothing. Don't, you know, put your hands up or get on the ground, nothing. They just came in. Like I said, their guns were drawn already. They came in tasing and shooting. No word said. This kid didn't have a chance. They surrounded him. If you look behind you, you can see in the toolbox, that's a bullet hole right there. There's a bullet hole lodged in the window right there. Behind that lamp, there's a big section of the wall they cut out with multiple bullet holes. There's a bullet hole going out the front screen door. And if you look ahead of you, those are bullet holes there. Mm-hmm. And none of these, all these bullet holes are under 3 feet to a foot from the floor. You see that bullet hole in the toolbox? They were shooting Desmond when he was down. And which I told him, I seen Fleer empty his gun into Desmond. Desmond was dead before he hit the floor, man. I looked in my son's face. Mm. Yeah, I looked in his eyes. And he was gone. He was gone before he hit the floor. He was dead, you know. But that didn't stop him from shooting, you know. All of the bullets he caught was in the head, face, neck. Desmond's 6'1" and a half. And you got bullet holes a foot from the floor to 2 feet to under 3 feet. You know, and then they lie and they laugh and shit and high five each other after they just murdered the innocent kid, man. And they murdered him in cold blood. You know, and you know, I see my baby murdered, and again, I don't want anybody in this community to ever go through that. Ever, you know. Yeah, he's a beautiful child, man, and he was murdered.
I can't express my the sheer pain that I feel for you, my brother, man. No one should have to live through what you just explained to us and what you've had to experience. I met Rain through this, and so there's been so many beautiful things that have happened from this, but one of the most atrocious things that I can think of in my lifetime that has happened. And so on this day, Desmond's birthday, I would like to celebrate, you know, his legacy and the things that he has done for our community. And so I want to give you an opportunity to speak to the great things that Desmond Phillips has done and what his true legacy is, not just what has been done to him.
You know, what he has done, man, is I believe that he has brought this community closer.
Yes.
You know, he's opened a lot of eyes and
so many.
You know, there's a lot of good things that are coming out of this tragedy. You know, it's again just the mere fact that people are coming together and realizing, you know, what's going on and what's been taking place in this community, and you know, I know that he started the feeding program between me and him,
mm-hmm.
You know, and there's so many other people of the community that I notice now that are out and they're feeding and they're passing out sleeping bags and they're passing out socks and things like this. And I like to think that, you know what, you know, he has a lot to do with that. You know, he has a lot to do with people, you know, starting to you know, connect with each other.
I can guarantee you that is the case, because personally, you know, when I see these things and I see people, especially online, you see a lot of people with some very fascist, just uninformed type opinions and very callous, hateful opinions towards people who are living without you know, comfortable housing. And yeah. So when I hear them speak on that, I just always remember Desmond and how you and him would go downtown and take your time and your money to feed these peoples and communicate with them and treat them as we all deserve to be treated.
Yeah.
Opposed to just sitting online having opinions about it. And so, you know, I thank you for raising them to be that man. And Desmond Phillips, I thank you eternally for your legacy of compassion towards the least of us.
This is Corey Hunt on the Peace and Social Justice Show, celebrating the life of Desmond Phillips. The Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling education and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday night market and Saturday farmers market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. That's C-H-I-C-O-V-E-L-O. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with David Phillips, the father of Desmond Phillips, who was killed by Chico police in 2017, and Rain Shearer, member of the Justice for Desmond team. After years of fighting to seek justice against a system that continues to back itself, what is Justice for Desmond team up to these days?
Well, we started an online petition trying to end qualified immunity. And again, all we Actually, Rain, you could explain that a little bit better.
We're doing. Yeah. So we've done a lot of things over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we've been working on recently is this specific issue of qualified immunity. It's a strange phrase. A lot of people don't know what that means. Basically, what it means is that police officers are individually protected from litigation, from being personally sued or held responsible in any way for things that they do as police officers. And so what that means is that the individual officers are not legally liable for the fact that they killed Desmond Phillips in many ways, and particularly because they are not facing criminal prosecution at this time. And so we do have a petition that's up on our Facebook page. The best way to find information about Justice for Desmond is to look on the Facebook page, Justice for Desmond Phillips. We have the petition up there, and we're looking to end qualified immunity at the state level. We have learned very, very well over the last few years that the structures of power on a local level are not going to be doing much for us, and they don't have the ability or the want to do what is needed as far as police accountability and making our community safer. And so as far as our local city council goes, as far as the county goes, we've learned that they're not willing to do much. But there has been more and more discussion and even legislation at the state level, and there's more promise there that we might be able to get change. And if we get change at the state level, then no matter what the opinions of the people on the local council are, they are accountable to what state law is. And so that is more of where we're headed, is as David has been saying for a while now, is we're going over their heads. Mm-hmm. That we're not waiting for local lawmakers, local people in positions of power to do the right thing, because we have learned very well that they won't.
Seems the case. Is there anything our listeners can do to assist in that process?
Yeah, we definitely want people to follow our page and look for updates. We want people to share that petition and sign that petition and realize that it's not a local thing. We want you to reach out to everybody you know across the state of California, because we really want it to happen on the state level. That's where it's really going to count. So, yeah, people can follow the Facebook page for updates on that. And everything else that we're doing, that's the best way to see those things, including for Desmond's birthday on January 1st when this show airs. We are requesting a couple things from the community in honor of Desmond's birthday. Normally, in the last few years, we hold an in-person event. Because of COVID-19, we're not going to do that this year. So we're asking folks to join us from your own home, from wherever you are, in lighting a candle in collective vigil in honor of Desmond's memory at 6 p.m. on January 1st. And in addition to that, if you go to the Facebook page, there is a graphic that we've created for this day that we're asking people to put up as your profile picture on your social media and share widely across your social media platforms to remind people of Desmond, remind people that it's his birthday, to keep his memory alive, and to really honor that legacy that David was just speaking to about the heart of Desmond, that he was a man who cared deeply about other people, and that his legacy is that we all do more to take care of each other in our community, especially those who have the least resources, especially those who are the most marginalized, the most endangered by the violence of police and others.
Yes, yeah, so insightful. Again, I can't thank you enough, David, for your powerful example of enduring through this generational struggle of oppression. And thank you for informing us and reminding us that we need to keep the legacy alive of those who lost their lives to structures that we have yet to dismantle. And so here on January 1st, as we celebrate the life of Desmond Phillips, I wanted to give you another opportunity just to share with us anything about that young man that you think we should all remember in the coming years.
Yeah, well, just remember that, again, as I said before, that Desmond loved you. Remember that, you know, he was a child of God, and that he, again, he just wanted to love on everybody, to help whoever, you know, and just he wanted to make the world a better place, you know. He wanted everybody to get along. He, you know, and that's the way that he was brought up, you know. We see no racism. We see no, you know, we're not racist is what I want to say. We see no color, you know. To us, to Desmond, everyone is everyone. You know what I mean? We love everyone, you know, and just remember that that kid loved you. He didn't have to know you, but he loved you, and he would give you the shirt off his back. And he want us to make a difference here. You know, out of his tragedy, out of this tragedy, he would want us, and he would want us to make a difference. He would want change, and that's what we're working on, you know. There's been too many killed here, you know. Not only Desmond, Tyler Rushing, Robert Battaglia, and
Stephen Vest.
Stephen Vest. He, and you know, I've spoke to a few people that actually witnessed that killing, and it was a murder as well. Mm-hmm. You know, from the people that I've talked to, it was just a cold blooded murder as well. And we need to make change. You know, we need to change the city council. We need to have people up there that's going to actually care and do their job, you know. Again, yeah, just know that he loved you.
And we love you, Desmond Phillips, forever and always. And we love you, David Phillips, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for your time as well, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
So much gratitude to Mr. Phillips and Ray and Cher for sharing their time with us and that valuable information. It is so crucial that we keep alive the legacy of those who lost their lives to systems that are still in place. And we, as citizens, it is our responsibility to affect these systems and create a society where those of us, where we're all safe to survive. And as always, the views and opinions voiced on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or underwriters. They are the views and opinions of my guest and or mine alone. Coming up in the next hour is a pair of sapient sessions in honor of Desmond Phillips. First, I speak with CNR's 2019 Volunteer of the Year, mental health activist, and crisis care advocacy and triage representative Lisa Currier, about her 25 years experience, mental health court, insight around CCAT, and much more. Followed by an inspiring conversation with Melis Bonifacio. Bonifacio, a Latinx queer student, activist, and organizer, shares their thoughts around humanitarianism, policing, and inform us about the Students for Quality Education movement. But first, a powerful song by Mumu Fresh called Say My Name. Written as a tribute to Sandra Bland, a black woman who died in police custody after being pulled over for a traffic stop, the song has gone on to become an anthem of those protesting police brutality and killings. Here is Mumona Yusuf, a.k.a. Mumu Fresh, with Say My Name on KZFR 90.1 Chico.
If I should die
the hands of the policeman. Oh, and the papers say we're gonna call it a suicide. Would you even question why? Oh, would you believe in my innocence? Would you even come to my defense? Would you believe in the good I've done? Will my name be spared and my soul be unsung? Search for the answer, we'll take what they hand us. Who's gonna stand with me? Please, please, please don't forget about me.
Eventually die, shot with their hands in the sky. Your favorite revolutionaries give up and comply. For a house on the hills, white wife, couple meals. I'm less of Mohicans, I guess. Fighting for a cause, they say it's lost, but I can't let it rest. Rebellion in the memories of my mama's breast. And I drank till I was drunk, like I was lean off that crump. We live in every word that we rapping about. And the struggle, it get hard, but we ain't backing out. Nothing is impossible. The word alone, cause I'm possible. So I'm the race force that I'm riding for. Audacity of hope. To believe you can't succeed when everybody in their mama say no. Oh, y'all, I'm different. Descending of the fittest. Reincarnated just so I can handle business. My name.
That was Mumu Fresh with Say My Name here on listener-supported radio, KZFR 90.1 Chico. Also available on KZFR.org. We thank you for listening and appreciate your contributions. You can go to KZFR.org and tip specific shows you enjoy or donate to the station as a whole at any time. Every contribution is critical to keeping this priceless media outlet alive so we can continue to bring you segments like this next one. As we continue the celebration of Desmond Phillips' birthday, I thought it would be fitting to sit with local mental health advocate and activist Lisa Currier to hopefully raise our community's shared understanding around mental health and the issues connected to it. In this Sapient session, Currier is candid with her understanding of the systems in place around mental health, sharing her experiences as an advocate, insight into some common misconceptions around unhoused people, and much more. I hope you gain sapience from this session and enjoy. So, who am I speaking with?
Well, my name is Lisa Currier, and I'm from Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage here in Chico, California.
Awesome. I thank you for your time, Lisa. For our listeners, could you explain what CCAT is?
So, CCAT is a nonprofit organization that helps folks mainly suffering from mental illness, homelessness, and addiction. So, we're 24/7, 365. You can call us if you need some de-escalation or you need some help. So, we'd rather be the first call than the last call. Mm.
Definitely. How did you end up getting involved with that?
We started this organization. So my friend Valerie and I have been doing outreach on the streets, and I've been doing outreach for people suffering mental health advocacy for 25 years. And my friend Valerie is a social worker, and she has been working at behavioral health and other spots. She was volunteering with me, and we were doing street outreach, and she went to Napa and actually helped begin the Napa street outreach that they have that engages with their police department. So she came back and said, hey, maybe we should start a nonprofit doing it. Mm-hmm. So that way we can do it, you know, together and be on the street. And, you know, that might be good, started with this type of model that they're doing, right? And so that's what we did. And we've been doing this now on the streets of Chico for or Butte County for about 7 years. 8 years. Mm. And we just go when people call us. So it's not just people on the street, it's families also. So we get a lot of calls from families who are suffering with a loved one in their home that suffers mental illness, addiction, or you know, in and out of incarceration. We work with the Butte County Jail Inmate Advocate to help the families navigate the system. So, you know, I know exactly all the questions that they're going to ask the inmate advocate and what the information is that she needs in order to get families' information. Is my son or daughter having their medication? Is my son or daughter housed here? When can I visit my son or daughter? They need their glasses, or, you know, there's multiple different types of questions. And so what we do is we help there too as well. We're feeding also about 300 people a month, just our little team. So we do a lot of, we have a gentleman who smokes large amounts of meat for us that we pass out on the streets and give to. And yeah, Chris Howell, he's pretty rad. And then we also give money and, time to the Hunger Trolley. And a big shout out to my church. My church, is this year, they have chosen CCAT as the outreach for Christmas. So this Christmas, we're feeding six families with children, 12 children. Two or three families are homeless, in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And so we have those six families, and I have a group of moms, led by my friend Nova White, who's, put the moms together, and she's cooking full meals for these families. And we have you know, gifts for the kids and that. So not only are we doing de-escalation on the street of someone who's standing in the middle of the roadway taking their clothes off or screaming or throwing a rock at a bus, we can go out and do those things. The benefit to having our own nonprofit and not working for an agency is the fact that I can go to the street. If Eric is in the middle of the street yelling and screaming, I can get a call. I can go there. I can pick up Eric and put him in my car without a question. Mm-hmm. And say, hey, Eric, you want to, you know, come chill with a coffee or get a burger, or, you know, or just sit with them. If there's a drunk lady over at the plaza and she's getting, you know, the police don't want her to be there because she's yelling or what, I can go sit with her for a couple hours and until she comes down and talk her through some stuff. The beautiful thing about us also is that we follow through. There's a girl who I love, who's been on the street for years, lost her child, and I met her, I think it was like 7 years ago. And she lost her child. She was doing addiction. She was getting arrested. And now she has just graduated Stepping Stones, all those programs. I was her advocate to get into mental health court, which is new from this year. It's been a year. So it's been a year since mental health court's been going on. But she's one of the first people in mental health court, which means that she has to follow all the rules. She has to go to therapist. She has to go to AA, NA, whatever it is. She has to check in, and then she has to check in with the court every month. And so she followed all those rules, and she's about ready to graduate mental health court, and she's been sober 20 months. So it's about what I feel like is it's about humanitarian efforts.
And it's about the efforts of people. It's not whether you vote red or blue, you're black or white, it's nothing like that. So for me, we have lost the seat at the table. The seat at the table is, when I was a kid, you know, we all ate dinner at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of parents can't do that now because we have a lot of single parents. We have people who work through that dinner table time. But when do you make that time for your child? And when do you make that time for your family to find out what's happening for that day or that month? Or, you know, a lot of times things will pass and we'll go, shit, I never even knew that. Mm-hmm. Well, if we had the seat at the table every day, we might know that. We need to communicate better. We need to get closer with people instead of pushing everybody away and, you know, all these different things. It's just we've lost humanitarian efforts. So with CCAT, we also go back and we check out, like this one, you know, 8 years we've been together, right? And sometimes she'll say, you know, I don't want to talk to you today, right?
Yeah.
And so it's come as you are. Mm-hmm. Not do as I say.
Oh, yes.
So it's huge for me because if she doesn't want to talk to me that day, then, you know, there's days I don't want to talk to somebody. Why can I not understand that? Why am I going to put her on blast? Like if I'm a police officer or I'm a social worker or something like that. Don't you ever have days you just want to curl up in your own darn bed or you just don't want to talk to anybody? And why is that not okay for someone who's homeless or someone who has addiction? Why is that not okay? It has to be okay. We all feel it. And so we're all about, this is who you are. This is, we accept it. Do we always like it? No. Mm-hmm. No. But that's not for me to sit there and judge and say, hey, you know, I don't, you know, I can say, hey, I don't like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I don't approve. That's not for me to say. Mm. It's for me to say, is this the best way that you can be for yourself? Right? It's not for me to say, you know, stop. I mean, I can say stop. And I have said it, but they need to make that decision on their own. I can't be in judgment of that.
If you're just joining us, this is Corey Hunt with Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage co-founder Lisa Currier. As we join back in the conversation, she's telling us about solutions.
I'm going to give you one example to start off with, and then I'll give you another one.
Please.
So everybody thinks that somebody with schizophrenia or bipolar that is a street human, mm-hmm. Is using drugs. Mm-hmm. Always it's like they're using drugs or no, they're violent or, you know, they're all these different things, right? Mm-hmm. That's not always the case. So, yes, there's some induced psychoses that are that have to deal with mental illness and drug addiction. And sometimes what happens is that our street folks have their medications out on the street and they're getting robbed. Mm. And then how do they get their next set of medication? Mm-hmm. Because they can't go back to the pharmacy because the pharmacy doesn't do that. We have no place in this town where someone can lock up their medications and go there every day in order to take them. Somewhere generically that's, you know, not known, you know, that's just for our folks so that their medications don't get stolen. I had one instance with one gentleman and totally out of in psychosis and my own son, right? Mm. And the police came and they went in 5150 him because they didn't want to, even though behavioral health wanted to. Spent 17 weeks in psychosis. Finally, when we did have to have police interaction, now we had 6 calls for help. Mm-hmm. His psychiatrist, myself, called for help from behavioral health to come and evaluate and do a 5150 because he was clearly in psychosis. Mm-hmm. When he finally was arrested, he was put in the drunk tank. Mm. And so the tank for people who are high. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, because I am an advocate and they know me, they tested him straight away and not waiting for, you know, a day or whatever. Mm-hmm. They tested him straight away because his schizoaffective disorder is organic. He doesn't use drugs and he barely drinks. I mean, occasionally he'll have a beer or whatever like that. Once in a while, smoke a blunt. But it's not, you know, anything like heavy. He's not, never done drugs and nothing like that. So when they lock him up and the sheriff says, my guys know, they're trained to know whether he's high or not, and we're swearing that he's not. And then when they test him and find out that he's not, they're like, wow. So we need to educate ourselves on is knowing the difference. I can tell you if someone's in psychosis by looking at their eyes straight away.
Okay.
Straight away. I mean, you know, you can tell by the behavior, but also there's a look. There's a schizophrenic look. And most everybody has it when they're in psychosis or, right?
Okay.
There's a body language. There's a different type of tone in which they speak. There's a manner, when what we need to do is we need to, realize what people's baseline functioning is. So if I know Corey is like this every single day, all of a sudden Corey starts to make a shift. And I'm thinking, okay, what's wrong with Corey today? What's going on? Let's find out about Corey. Okay, so we check that out, and everything's okay. If what we do here in this country and in this county and in this city is we wait till the escalation is so damn high, and then we go in full force, you know, guns out, and people are getting killed and hurt, right?
Yes.
There's a gentleman who was in mental health court, and he was called on by, he was called, his sponsor and his landlord was called and called into Chico PD that he was, you know, not doing well, and he had a gun, and he didn't normally have a gun, and he was going through mental health court. He was normally doing, he had a job, he was doing really well, he got his place, right? But somehow the medications went off, and you know, after two or three calls, nobody went out to check on him or do anything about it, right? This was like on a Friday and a Saturday. On Sunday, he shot and killed a man in Chico. And now, this poor guy, who's in his 20s, right, will be spending the rest of his life in jail for something that we didn't reply to.
Yes.
So are we replying in the right manner?
No.
No. Are we coming out full force? Are parents being told, we can't talk to you because your child's over 18? Yes. There are a lot of parents, I know there's been abuse on criminalized, you know, putting people in situations where they don't belong, people taking advantage of people who are less fortunate or their mind isn't equipped. That's a good one. Thank you. To handle it. And the problem is that we don't give people the opportunity in order to be equipped. We don't give the people the opportunity to show what their baseline is. Yeah. We don't pay attention to what the baseline is. Right? We need to pay attention to what the baseline is, and then when something happens and someone calls for help, don't come at the last minute. Don't come when it's escalated so hard. We need to figure out a way to change the state laws and the federal laws so that way we can help our fellow humans. I mean, I would do anything. I would die for my boy, right? That's my boy is like the greatest gift that my ex-husband gave me was him, and I will always love my ex-husband for that.
Sure.
Right? That's how I feel so strongly about parenting and relationships and where do they all come from. And we really need to get back to that. But parents are so frustrated because there's no help out there. There's no detox here. Right? There's no spot. Even if they did 5150, then what happens? They put it onto the jail. I don't think it's the jail's responsibility to house every mentally ill person that there is. It's crazy.
Not effective or efficient.
No, not at all.
If you're just joining us, this is Corey Hunt, and I'm speaking with Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage co-founder Lisa Currier on the Peace and Social Justice Show. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic offerings at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves, but drink with others. I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to the Memphis model and kind of educate our community on what that is.
So the Memphis model was created long ago, and it's a whole model of de-escalation and how do you deal with behavioral issues and issues for people suffering severe mental illness. So there's a man in Sacramento, Mike Summers, and he trains on Memphis model, and he trains Plumas County, Sacramento County, Tehama, Yolo, you know, all of those counties, except for Butte. Chico PD, he's come here and talked to Chico PD numerous times to get the training, and Chico PD, you know, snubbed their nose and sent him on his way. Mm-hmm. And they claim that they are doing Memphis model training now. Do you realize that there's been no crisis intervention training in this county for over a year? Mm-hmm. Over a year. And so we're depending upon behavioral health in order to make that happen. Why don't we just bring in Mike and, or, you know, have our officers go through the proper channels and not, you know, deem it out on Butte College or behavioral health? It's not happening. It's not effective. It's not working. The Memphis model is an intense training for 40 hours that goes through every different kind of aspect of mental health, including, you know, mental health for officers. So not only is it mental health for our people, they also train officers on what to do. You need to ask for help. If you need to ask for help because you can't manage it, or something's happening because it's so stressful for you of all these folks that are out there that you're dealing with, you also need to take the time and take care of yourself. And there is a place for officers that can go for free that have trauma for that. There's an officer that has that, a whole facility for that. So the thing is that what we need to do is we need to get the training. So I'm certified, post-certified, mm-hmm. which is the police certified, mm-hmm. Through this program. And what I'm trying to do, I would love to raise $35,000 to get 50 advocates trained. Because I think what we need to do is we need to train our advocates like we train our policemen. So our policemen come out because they go to the training, and it's fire first and ask questions later, mm-hmm. right? There's too many have died.
Yes.
And it's not okay. It's not okay to kill a man with, 15 shots when you can disarm him by shooting him in the leg. I know I get the stress of the police being out there and everything, but quite frankly, I think what's going on in Butte County and with Chico PD is, can I say this at a racial? I don't trust them. I don't trust the decision making that they make. I don't trust it's just hard for me because I see it too much, and people are going to get angry for me saying this, and I quite frankly, I don't really care anymore.
I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, well, I know, but you know, you try to maintain that balance. You can have relationships, and you know, it's horrible. Horrible. I mean, they did a disservice to my own family. They did a disservice to Tyler. They did a disservice to Desmond. They did a disservice to multiple people. It's not just us, right? Yeah. And I've seen them in action yelling at a drunk lady at the plaza, standing over the top of another person trying to plug their phone in somewhere else, standing over the top of them, four of them. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay. We're going to talk. We need to talk eye to eye, right? Mm-hmm. We need to meet them where they are, right? Yes. And we don't always need to be bitching about, you know, yelling at someone for drinking. Well, obviously, inside them, they know it's not okay to be that drunk and acting a fool in the park, right? In some level. But why are you going to tell them while they're in the middle of it? Let's build a relationship.
There you go.
Let's help them come down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's help them get to a safe spot and come back tomorrow and check and see if they're okay and find out what's happening with them. It is not about, I'm an alcoholic and I have to do that. It's about what's happening inside that's forcing me to have this behavior. Right?
Yes.
We're not finding the core of the people or the humanitarian efforts of loving one another. And I know everybody calls it sappy or whatever the heck they want to call it. I call it life.
There you go.
Right?
If you're just joining us, this is Corey Hunt, and I'm speaking with Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage co-founder Lisa Currier. And is there a website where listeners can stay up to date with what's going on?
It's ccat.life, because it's all about life. You know, it's not a .com, it's not a .net, it's a .life.
Didn't even know that was a thing. That's awesome.
Yeah, so anyway, so ccat.life. I'll put more information up there this week, probably next week. Next week.
Thank you. And before we go, I always like to ask my guests, if they're so inclined, to share three questions they'd like our listeners to ask themselves around moving forward and being productive, and a favorite proverb.
So first off, the three things is, I feel helpless and can't do anything. Yes, you can, because you can help fund agencies like us, or educate yourself, or have us come and speak to you, right?
Yes.
Second is, I have a family member that I love dearly, and I don't know how to help them into what services. Well, let's educate ourselves on what services are available, and how can we vote properly to get detox or housing, or how do we advocate at the state level to make these changes, because it's not going to help happen on the city or county level, right?
Yes.
Third is, can we please bring back the humanitarian to the table? Can we please stop believing that everybody is on drugs and derelict, because that's certainly not true. And we see dirt and whatever, we see that stuff, but if we can be a little bit more humanitarian and take care of their needs, I'm assuming that would probably not be there.
Yeah, everybody's worthy, even those that are struggling with drugs and so forth, you know. And so, yes, I appreciate all of that. And Lisa, proverb to send us out of here.
I don't even know what's a good one. You know, I think that I think the only thing that I can say is that we need to walk the path and not talk the talk.
Woo. That hits it. Thank you so much, Lisa Currier.
Thanks, Corey.
For all
I appreciate
that you do, and spending this time with me to educate our community. And, you know, on behalf of all of our community, I'd like to give you your flowers for all that you've done for helping. And,
thank you.
Man, we could use so many more of you.
Thanks, Corey. I appreciate you.
Blessings. Thanks again so much to Lisa Currier from Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage. You can keep up with what they have going on at ccat.life. That's ccat.life. That concludes that episode of Sapient Sessions. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Stay tuned for another at the finale of the show, as I sit with Melis Bonifacio, a member of the Students for Quality Education. But first, I'd like you to listen to another song. This one is by Beyonce, actually, and it's got an interesting message. It's from a guardian to a seed about self-worth and importance. And in Western society, that's often looked at as, you know, when you think of guardian, it's the parents. But in other cultures and societies, the guardian is, you know, everyone. We're all each other's keeper, and we're all responsible for making sure we're all well. And so I look at it from that way, and like to present you this song, Beyonce, Bigger, in that fashion.
If you you feel insignificant, you better think again. Better wake up, because you're part of something way bigger. You're part of something way bigger. Not just a speck in the universe, not just some words in a Bible verse. You are the living word. Ah, you're part of something way bigger. Bigger than you, bigger than we. Bigger than the picture they framed us to see. But now we see it, and it ain't no secret, no. Understand that truth about that question in your soul. Look up, don't look down, then watch the answers unfold. Life is your birthright, they hit that in a fine print. Take the pen and rewrite it. Step out your wisdom and step in your wisdom to know that you're excellent, right? Spirit is teaching, no, I'm not just preaching. I'm taking my own advice. Let mama let you know. Mama's still trying, I can't get no days off. I don't get no days off, truly I'm feeling it. I had to say that thing twice. Trying to be a good wife, still really hard, I can't lie. But I promised you I would fight, so I fight. If you're feeling frustrated, you're thinking I'm jumping in. Forgiveness is key, because we're fighting something way bigger. You never lose, we are winners. I'll be the roots, you be the tree. Pass on the fruit that was given to me. Legacy, we're part of something way bigger. Let love be the water I pour into you and you pour into me. There ain't no drought here, blooming to our actual powers. I'll be a sanctuary, you just don't know yet. You just don't know yet. No matter how hard it gets, you got my blood in you, and you're gonna. Better think again. Better wake up, because you're part of something way bigger. You're part of something way bigger. I'll be the roots, you'll be the tree. Pass on the fruit that was given to me. Legacy, we're part of something way bigger.
Such a powerful track. We are all bigger than ourselves. This next guest really embodies that and comes with so much passion. And so I'll just get straight into it with Melis Bonifacio, a Latinx queer activist and a Chico State student that was gracious enough to share their time with me. I hope you enjoy this Sapient session.
And who am I speaking with today?
Hi, my name is Melis Bonifacio Jerez. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. I am a senior at Chico State, and I'm also the intern for Students for Quality Education, the chapter here at Chico State that is supported by the California Faculty Association.
Awesome. I thank you for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I reached out to you because we did an interview, I mean, for multiple reasons, but a main one being when we did that interview with Stephen Breedlove.
Right.
You really had some very important things that, and powerful things to share that I wanted to get out to the KZFR listeners.
Thank you.
And when we were housekeeping about setting this up, one of the things you wanted to mention and speak on was identity and self. So mm-hmm. would you like to share your ideas around that?
Sure. So right off the bat, I'm Afro-Latinx. Mm-hmm. My parents migrated to the United States from the Dominican Republic. My father is black. My mother is Italian, Spanish, and some indigenous there. It's kind of lost, you know, but yeah. So, and I grew up in New York City, so I grew up surrounded by black and brown folks literally everywhere. When I came to California, especially here in Northern California, it was like a culture shock. Because mm-hmm. suddenly now I'm surrounded by white people, you know? And then it was like, okay, like growing up, I saw white folks like on TV. I saw them like my doctors, they're my landlords, like those folks, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really interesting, like integrating myself, almost like assimilating here, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of get used to like how people saw me, like, back home, I was used to kind of like being part of like the crowd. Mm-hmm. And now here, like I stick out in the crowd. And that's been really difficult. Mm. But it's also like helped me because right off the bat, I know that people don't expect me in spaces. Mm. And I take that as a powerful thing, right? Where it's like, okay, you don't expect me here. Good. You know, I'm here for a reason, right? And I'm going to show you why. So I try to harness like that anxiety and like insecurities about being black here and things like that into that powerful message of like, oh, you are going to hear me, you mm-hmm. know, because I deserve to be here, you know?
Definitely.
So, yeah.
And I appreciate the energy. I remember we were doing the community assemblies at the plaza. Mm-hmm. And yeah, your energy was definitely, I mean, everybody's energy was definitely something that has helped me through these days, you know, as we've got this new council and they've been yeah. getting extremely aggressive with the unhoused.
Evil.
And, I mean, I guess let's get to that. Let's speak to that. There was just footage of dump trucks going to what they call the Triangle, a unhoused yep. encampment, and they were doing what looks like the first steps of evicting those peoples right before Christmas here
right
in the wintertime. I just wanted to give you a chance to speak to your thoughts around that and anything on that.
Yeah, thank you for giving me space to talk about it. This is definitely something that, as you know, folks here in Chico, we need to really start paying attention to the fact that our city council is enacting fascist mm-hmm. policies, and they're removing families, they're removing people, people who probably lost their homes in the campfire, who lost their homes in this fire that happened like this year, people who don't have access to shelter because they may have lost their jobs, they're going through things. How disgusting it is for people who are supposed to be, who are elected, right? Mm-hmm. Who are supposed to represent everybody, right? And yet they look at these people who are some of the most like traumatized, marginalized people who are literally freezing on the street, you know, dying. Every year there's an unhoused person who has died on the street. I look at our city council and like I understand that, you know, people are worried and like they're scared and all these things about folks, you know, being on the street or going into their neighborhoods. But the thing is that if we don't figure out a solution, like an actual compassionate, ethical way of treating this like issue, we're not gonna get anywhere. No. Especially like the very fact that this is happening literally a week before Christmas, that's not Christian like. That is not Christian like. That is evil, you know? And I will say that because, you know, I grew up religious and like it doesn't sound right to me as someone who grew up that way to like see like people, literally people like you and me having to deal with that, having to face like this awful like discrimination only because they don't have a roof over their head, all because they might be addicted to a substance. How is that fair? It's not It's evil. I'm sorry, but I have to say it like it is.
And that brings me, you know, because the people who are enforcing these fascist laws are those who are supposed to be protecting and serving us.
Exactly.
Or that's their slogan anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess that brings us to the SQE that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love for you to, inform Chico a little bit more about what that is and why you're involved with that.
Of course. Oh, excuse me. Mm. So I'm part of Students for Quality Education, also known as SQE. SQE is on every CSU campus. It's a student-led advocacy group. Basically, what we do is we advocate for student issues and rights. You know, homelessness, obviously, is a student issue. We advocate for student rights and things like that, freedom of speech, the need for students of color to have space to talk about these issues, to talk about racism, to talk about, you know, the fact that, especially here in Chico, you know, Chico State admin will literally, like, prop up students of color and put them on their website and be like, oh, yeah, this is a very safe space, but then they don't address the racist issues that have happened here, the very fact that Chico State's, you know, we do have a land acknowledgement, and that's great, but it's like, there's just so much history here.
Yes.
That is not talked about at all, you know, and when you bring, especially the racism, I mean, the very fact that, like, Desmond Phillips was killed by Chico PD,
yes.
You know, he was just a young man who needed help.
Yes.
And he was killed for that, you know, and, like, that's something that students don't learn about. So, like, things happen. Like, this summer with the Black Lives Matter protesters and stuff and the rallies, that's when students learned about Desmond Phillips, about Mark Thompson, you know, about the things that happened here. And students were mad. They were like, oh, my goodness, this happened here, too. Mm. This happened here, too. And that upset them. And it is upsetting,
yes.
You know? Like how you say, these, especially with, like, the police, they're supposed to protect and serve us. But then it's like, that doesn't... It doesn't translate into their actions. You get me?
Yes, indeed.
And that's unfortunate.
We're such a diverse peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of brushed on identity a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it's apropos to kind of wind it back as we're speaking on this, because some people don't recognize the difficulties that others are having with police because they're not personally having them because of their background and things that they're associated with. And you, as a Afro-Latinx queer,
mm-hmm.
could you speak to, you know, just the difficulties that people seem to not understand that maybe a cisgendered white male may not encounter?
Well, think of it like this. Like, if something were to happen to me, I can't call the cops.
Mm.
I couldn't because they automatically, like, someone, I'm a queer, femme-identified person, you know, I'm tiny, I look very feminine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Automatically, like, they're going to make assumptions about me, about what the way I look, my ethnicity as well. How do I even speak on it? It's almost like, I don't even know. I'm almost speechless in a way because it's like, how do you translate all that for someone who wouldn't understand?
Mm.
You know, the only thing I could say is that if that's their job, then they should be doing their job. But they don't do their jobs, and that's the problem. You know, like, again, if something were to happen to me, what would they do? I mean, you know, this is actually really interesting. We're talking here because there was an incident here in the area we're at with UPD.
And this is in front of a Butte
Hall. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I don't want to speak too much on it, but
basically
what I can say is that happens here. UPD has definitely not taken the best interest of their students,
mm-hmm.
specifically students of color. I have personally seen a UPD officer reach for his gun when there was just a student on their bike.
Mm.
You know, you're not supposed to ride your bike through campus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people do it anyway.
Sure.
But the very fact that he reached for his gun.
For riding
through a campus. That's unfortunate. And that makes me think, well, how are you going to react if something were to happen to me? You know?
A thought never far from my mind either, you know.
Exactly.
Being a black man with mental issues.
Yes.
It's just never far from my mind. Every time I see a cop car or anything, you know, it's just like any little encounter can just go so far to the end. You know, the fact that that's an option and a possibility is a daily struggle, you know.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of people, they say we need to reform them. We need to give them more training. And I've heard a myriad of different ideas, and we've been trying to do this for a long time. And
decades.
I think a large part of the issue is people just don't even understand what policing, American policing, actually is, and you know its origins, you know, as far as, you know, what they did to the indigenous as settlers were coming through, and what they did to black folks as they were chastising them for their labor and stealing their labor.
Yes.
And how, you know, a lot of these precincts in America originated as slave patrols, literally.
Yep.
And so, you know, that the residual effects of that culture remain. And when most of us don't understand that that is, was even ever a thing, then we can't address it. And so I see a lot of people unable to really address the actual issues of policing.
Mm-hmm.
And you, as someone dealing with SQE, I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to what you think we should do about American policing.
That's a big question, because, like, me giving that responsibility to me?
Just your opinion.
My opinion?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my opinion. So this is the problem, right? We are seeing, obviously, people, specifically black folks, right, and folks in solidarity with Black Lives Matter movement, this call to defund the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they say this should be done is because, as we've seen through years, decades of reform, you know, I remember Rodney King. I remember the Rodney King riots. I remember all that. And, like, the fact that this is still happening,
yes.
And I'm 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when that happened, I was like, what, maybe 7, 8? And it's still happening. We've given money continuously throughout the years to police departments for training, for de-escalation, for disarming. Yet, it's still happening. So what's happening is that these departments are getting more money and
yes.
more funding,
yes.
you know, in the name of reform, thinking if we just throw money at the departments, then maybe they can regulate themselves.
Mm.
But the thing is that they've been doing that for decades.
Yes.
And that's why things aren't getting done.
They aren't.
Because you have the police unions who literally, like, will like, control, like, the situations. I remember I listened to a podcast, like, The Daily. And there was a black officer from Minneapolis, I believe. And he was like, I'm trying to reform. I'm trying to do things. Even their police department, like, created a specific task force that had, like, all black officers.
Mm.
When the union found out, they're like, that's discrimination.
Mm.
That's not okay. You know? And it's like, the very fact that they were able to challenge that, you literally had people of color, literally, who are officers, who are at least trying to create some space for those conversations.
Sure.
And they got shut down by the union. That's a problem.
Yes.
And that's what's happening. You know? And it's like, that's... this is the issue, right? We need to really address what's going on inside these departments.
Yes.
You know, like, part of the People's Assembly, we talked about the fact that our city budget, you know, the police got more. What was it, 48%, 49%?
Yes. And then after we did that and the people were calling for an audit of that budget,
mm-hmm.
the ex-mayor called for an audit of police use of force, which I was a part of that committee, and it was... disgusting because,
yep.
you know, we're getting all this information and everybody in the meeting is saying how, oh, they're doing everything that they can and everything's working and everything's good. Then Stephen Vest gets murdered,
yes.
you know, in the street, showing
yes.
that, no, we're not, it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was just to throw more money at it without any conversation about why and if that was the right idea, what that would do to help or anything. As I'm sitting in all these meetings, none of that was brought up. It's just the next meeting. It's, oh, and we allocated $200,000 more dollars for
gross.
Training. And it's just like, it's frustrating because
very.
We just want to be comfortable living a life. You know, it's not even the pursuit of happiness. It's just the pursuit of comfort, you
yeah,
know,
it's literally
to
that.
Live. And
yes.
so it's exhausting, and I appreciate civilians like yourself, Sapient Citizens, doing the work.
Doing the people's work.
Doing the people's work.
If you're just tuning in, this is Corey Hunt, and I'm speaking with Melis Bonifacio. Bonifacio is a member of the Students for Quality Education. Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. and by Sonia Airy, an Allstate insurance agent. Sonia is concerned about the community and helps families understand their immediate and long-term needs and goals. For more information about protecting your life, home, vehicle, or boat, or to roll over your 401k account, call Sonia at 345-2351.
So I guess that brings me to the next point of the People's Assembly and the new Poor People's Campaign.
Yes, yes, yes.
I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay, so, right, the Poor People's Campaign, I believe, started, right, back in the Civil Rights Movement with Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. and those folks and the Preachers Religious Movement, right? And so there's been a call to revive that movement, and I believe it has been revived in the last couple of years. And especially now, I've been paying a lot of attention to it because in the article that I mentioned to you, they talked about this quote by Frederick Douglass where he says, what was it, power concedes nothing without demand, right? And that's been weighing heavily a lot on I've been thinking about it heavily lately, you know, especially with like the pandemic, you know, and seeing folks lose their jobs, seeing folks having to choose between like this or that, you know, should I stay home? Should I like take care of my children? Like, you know, it's like, oh, da-da. There's a lot that folks are going through right now. And like the very fact that we can't get like a stimulus check passed in Congress, the very fact that we can't get Medicare for all, the very fact we can't get a Green New Deal, like,
the fact that when we do get these minimal things passed, so much of it goes to the corporations. That is very, very exhausting. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. Please cut me off. I mean, the very fact that the CARES Act monies, like there were billionaires and companies that got CARES Act monies, you know, before.
The largest percentage of it, most of it.
Exactly. I think even like Elon Musk got CARES money. It's like, how? Why? You don't need that money. But you see, there you go. That's how it is. It's always that. It's always catering towards, like, the 1% or, like, the folks who have power.
Yes.
And I'm noticing now with, like, you know, folks, you know, my community members, students, you know, family members who are just, they're tired. They're tired of this. They're tired and they're scared and they're like, I don't know what to do. And I'm always that person who will tell you do more. And that's why I've been really, really into that quote lately. Because it's like, that's true. We have power. We have a power that I think we're not seeing, you know? Definitely. I mean, look at over the summer, the Black Lives Matter protest and the movement. Like, I think that's been, like, the biggest movement in our history so far.
Sure.
And it's going to get bigger. It's going to get beautiful and, like, even more amazing, right? I'm so excited, right? You know, it's just, we literally have the power to tell our representatives, hey, you should force that vote for Medicare for all. Like, to be honest, I'm disappointed in AOC because she's saying, well, if we force a vote, then I'm going to lose my committee job. And it's like, okay, then lose your job. You know how many thousands, millions of Americans are losing their jobs, losing access to shelter?
Their lives,
exactly. Even like this with the police brutality issue and things, like, I remember there was like a scholar strike throughout the CSU, and I'm like, that's beautiful, but like, what are we doing? These are your students. These are your faculty, your staff. What are we doing? I think people are scared. They're scared.
Yes.
They're very scared. They're scared because this is almost unprecedented, right? And I'm always, always, always reminding people, like, yes, this is unprecedented. And it is really scary. But don't give up. Don't be afraid. You know, power concedes nothing without a demand. So demand it. Right? Like, I go into, like, these spaces at Chico State. I'm sure they're all mad. Admin, they're probably all mad at me. They know my name. They do. You know, I go in there and I ask for more. I ask, why can't you do this? Take a pay cut. You know, give me 10%. Give it to your students. And people look at me like I'm nuts. And it's like, I'm not nuts.
No.
It's because I'm asking for what I deserve, for what you deserve, what we all deserve. Mm-hmm. We deserve Medicare for All. We deserve a Green New Deal. We deserve, like, all these beautiful things that will help us become fully realized human beings. Which is what we are. But capitalism and everything else in society just shrinks us down to make us just, like, be, like, helpless and hopeless so that we don't fight back. I want you to stand up and fight back. I'm telling you, listeners, stand up and fight back. Like, if you're worried about our unhoused community, let's show up for our unhoused community.
Yes.
Right? Let's go. Let's protect them. Let's make sure that they have access to shelter. Let's go to city council. Email them. Call them. They're public figures, right? Power concedes nothing without a demand.
Yes, we all, I mean, that's my mantra for sure is, you know, as long as we're going to be in this system, engage, you know, engage where you are with your understanding and grow your understanding. And that one thing that you said is, you know, you reach out to your representatives.
Yes.
That's such a huge step that a lot of citizens just don't recognize that they personally have. They're waiting for the Melis to do it and the other activists of our world, and they have to do. You need them. We need them to be there for themselves and for us. And so I thank you for mentioning that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I thank you so much for your time. What a thing that I do with my Sapien Sessions, at the end I ask my guests, it's strictly voluntary, if they would feel comfortable giving our listeners three questions that they ask themselves or would encourage others to ask themselves around just being sapient, you know, as far as just being responsible, moral, and productive.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of your favorite proverbs.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I'm trying to think. So
take your time.
I guess maybe one question I can think of is, like, if you're a police officer and you're listening to this, I really want you to ask yourself, if I saw something bad happen, like if I saw another police officer do something bad in front of me, can I tell my supervisor, and will that get taken care of? You get me? Will that injustice be handled by your supervisor? Because to be honest, I don't see that happening, and that terrifies me, because there's already these folks who have so more money than any of us can see, you know, and they get to decide our laws. That's not fair. That's not fair at all, you know? So I would really, like, if you are an officer listening, I would really want you to question, like, can I really do good if I see something bad happening? Will I be supported not only by my supervisor, but by my team as well? You know, do I have that support if I see something happening? You know, will I lose my job? Do I have to risk my job if I see something bad happening? Can I say it? Can I speak it? Can I help? You know? And I think that's what it comes down to, right? Because I'm someone who, like, as I talk about abolishing and things, you know, I'm someone who comes from love too, as well. You know, the reason why I say those things is not, part of it is like anger, yes, but also because of love, you know, because I'm noticing the injustices that are happening to not only, you know, my peers who are students, but also like our community members, our in-house friends. How can you be an officer and go take, see a family and you take away their tent, their belongings? How does that make you feel? You know, can you look at them in the eye and take away their, you know, their possessions? Who are you then? Where's your humanity? In a way, right? And I understand that, like, of course, like, that job can harden you. You know, I can see why. I absolutely can. But I don't think that humanity should be robbed away from that job. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Like, you, even more, you should be more human. That's why I'm for abolishing. And that's why it needs to be something else. It cannot be what it is now. Because it's not working. And it's never worked. Period. You know?
Great question.
Okay, let's see. If you are, you know, a liberal, neoliberal, progressive, whatever, and you hear defund and that upsets you, I really want you to ask why. Ask yourself why.
That's amazing. Yes.
Ask yourself why.
I love that.
Because I know a lot of people, lots of white folks and some black and brown folks too, who are like, defund? Nah, we need the police. You know, and it's like, those conversations need to be had, right?
Definitely.
So I guess that would be the other question. Like, what? The third question would be, why do you think we need the police?
I love that.
There you go.
I love that.
There you go.
Whew.
You know, because if I were to answer that question, I'd be like, we don't. There was a time before the police, and there will be a time after. You know?
Thank you so much. Can I get a Melis proverb?
So definitely, I want folks to remember that, quote, power concedes nothing without a demand. Okay?
Yes.
So the Shirley Chisholm quote, if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. Literally, I will like show up and I'll just like, I'll stand in the corner. I'm like, I'm here. Just so you know, I'm not going anywhere. Right?
Oh, thank you so much, Melis, for your time and all of your works. And yeah, where can people stay informed on SQE and all that you guys are up to?
Okay, so if you're a student at Chico State, you want to make some noise, spring 2021, follow chicostate.sqe on Instagram.
Okay.
Hit us up. And then we have Defund Chico PD for the People's Assembly. If mm-hmm. you all want to get involved with that, I would definitely recommend the Instagram, Defund mm-hmm. Chico PD.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very powerful and informative information posted there on a regular basis, for sure. I recommend Absolutely. That resource as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, and I will see you around.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me.
As always, the views and opinions voiced on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or underwriters. They are the views and opinions of my guest and mine alone. That concludes another amazing Sapien session. Thank you again so much to Melise Bonifacio and all my guests, David Phillips, Rain Cher, and Lisa Currier, for sharing their wonderful information. Thank you all for tuning in to this celebration of life for Desmond Phillips. I invite you all to go to Facebook and check out the Justice for Desmond Phillips page and use the picture to celebrate his birthday, as well as join us in lighting a candle at 6 p.m. this evening from your home in remembrance of the life of Desmond Phillips. Close the show with just gratitude to everyone that's helped me along in this journey of being a co-host here on Peace and Social Justice Show. Thank you to Chris and Jesse, my co-host, and thank you to the whole KZFR family and Grant and everyone for helping me get these voices out to our community. It's really been a special journey for me that I hope to continue to grow in, and I hope you all continue to enjoy. This here that I'm going to do next is a piece that I actually wrote for Desmond Phillips. So much pain, so much hate. While so many die, when others look away, I'ma share peace and create space. Let's share peace and create space. So many arguing what's not the truth, and they never even truly knew. It would be silly, too, if it didn't cost so many based on the hue of the skin they ain't even get a chance to choose. Advancement of the youth, damaged by the rules. Not a roadblock, but a broken branch of clues. A few construe and use while the average confused lose hope and use dope. I've climbed out and grooved soul some of this Negro spiritual dream flow of that or that. We might not make it to the mountaintop. We see the gleam, though. With a clean coat and a mean snow, I've grown a hardened shell from a darkened trail to dance with Gargamel, come back and tell his secrets. The reasons, I'll be clear. As possible and logical, some obstacles take lots of skull. The skill and will of patience painted faintly across the cross of, ain't this kind of thankless we bear when making changes where there's no complaining? Maybe that's why we keep complaining. Or could it be the shaming, gunning down a man you was paid to protect because you wasn't trained enough to contain him? Now that's before explaining what part racial persuasion plays in Caucasian government agents. American conditioning goes both ways, and too many of us are afraid to say this. So many in the U.S. are unwilling to see it. So scared they're gonna lose what they never knew they had. They couldn't believe it. Meaner to protesters and speakers than killers in the street are a favorite change of topic when you ask how accountable police are. Emotions are inevitable. But what's a solution deferred? Or the value of an objective obscured for the pleasure of letting them know an opinion of their worth they can pretend they never heard? Thoughts to observe? Most deeds are for sure. But what thoughts will you encourage with your deeds, timing, and words is where we are the cure. So take deep breaths. Speak with open minds and hearts. Cease thoughts. Be smart. 'Cause we are the cure. I'm MC, and that concludes this week's Peace and Social Justice Show. Rest in peace, Desmond Phillips. And as always, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I'm MC, Soapbox, Corey Hunt, signing out. Good morning. I'm Corey Hunt, and this is the Peace.
All righty. This is Listener Supported Community Radio, 90.1 KZFR Chico. My name is Ray Longer. I'll be your host today on Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon from 1 till 3. And here we are on January 1st, and I'm happy to be in here today with a fun show. Yes, I'm going to play a New Year's Eve show. I kind of went all around the block on this. and decided I'm not going to do that. I'm going to play leading up. I'm not going to play anything about New Year's. And then yesterday, while riding my bike, I stumbled into this killer show. 12/31/76, Cal Palace, standalone show. There was no 3 or 4 day lead up. And I'm going to bring you the opener and pretty much the whole second set. So I think you're going to dig it. A lot of music. Let's thank our supporters here. We want to thank Garden Connection, open 7 days a week at 1740 Feather River Boulevard in Oroville. Garden Connection specializes in organic soils and fertilizers, organic pest control, hydroponics, greenhouse supplies, and more. You can reach Garden Connection at 342-7762. And we want to thank Chico Business Association presenting the Downtown Chico online marketplace, where you can shop local and support our downtown businesses. There are over 42 retail shops and 50 restaurants just a click away. To shop safely this holiday season, visit shop.downtownchico.com. Thanks for keeping it local, and happy holidays from the Chico Downtown online marketplace. Alrighty, let's get right to it. Got a fun show. We're going to have a couple of Promised Land Bertha, then we'll get into that all